Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Before we begin, everyone do me a favor. Thanks. Read a little thing I wrote called The Federalist Papers. Yeah. I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I lost the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency? Yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Hey, Bitcoin Maxis. It's the Tokens Radio Show with our hosts, Christy Matthews, Linda Kent, and Cameron Walfort.
Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everybody.
This is Tokens Radio Show, where we talk about all things crypto, blockchain, and Web3. Good to have you here today.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yeah. Hey, Travis, how you doing? Thank you for that intro.
Good. You're welcome.
Good to see you.
I was just saying that I had fixed the computer. We're all good.
All right. Well, that we were wondering what all of the antics were, and we were hoping you had fixed a computer. Well, thank you so much for
back
that.
Back on schedule. Here we go.
All right.
All righty.
That's
awesome.
Always a good sign.
I'm going to go ahead and change my outline again.
Make another arrow, Chris.
Yeah. So my name is Christy Matthews.
I'm Linda Kent.
And I'm Cameron Walter.
He had to think about it. Who am I today?
Where am I and who am I?
Oh, gosh. We're a little giddy. We've been having some great conversation here while we were waiting for the show to start. So, you know, you can find us on Telegram and Twitter at Tokens Radio Show. In fact, we put up some articles today on the Telegram channel, so be sure to check them out. They're related to security, how to lock down your phone. There's some good stuff over there. And one of the topics we'll be talking about here shortly is an article up there about dollar cost averaging. So that's there for your review as well. And the chat room is open at KCNR1460.com, so come on in and join us. We'd love to chat with you, or give us a call, and we'll talk with you live at 530-605-4567. And if you missed one of our last shows, you can catch the replays at tokensradioshow.com.
You know what's funny is every time you say the phone number, my phone number also starts with 605, and I think that you said it wrong, and I go to correct you, and I'm like, oh, wait. That's my number. So never mind. That's the right number.
I'm glad you didn't put your phone number down there, Cameron. You'd probably get a lot of phone calls. And anyway, so today we're going to talk about the estimated 85% of the cryptos that are not currency, but they do have some sort of utility. So we're going to break that down for you. And remember, the scammers are out there in full force, so be safe. Never tell anyone your seed phrases, your pass phrases. And if you do have any questions about how to keep yourself safe online, especially when it comes to your cryptos, feel free to reach out to us, and we'll be glad to help you out.
Yeah, because you never know. There's weird things that happen.
That's right.
And we all need help sometimes with some of the weird things that happen.
And they's a happening in a big way.
Yes, they are.
Well, before we get started, here's a word from one of our affiliate partners. Tokens Radio Show has partnered with Swan Bitcoin. We are Swan Bitcoin customers and chose them because Swan is, well, easy to work with and inexpensive. Set up a Bitcoin savings plan and never miss out on the dips. It's perfect for both new and experienced Bitcoiners. Get the free book, Inventing Bitcoin, the technology behind the first truly scarce and decentralized money, and earn $10 of Bitcoin when you use our affiliate link, swanbitcoin.com/tokensradioshow. That's swanbitcoin.com/tokensradioshow. You know, we really do like Swan Bitcoin. That's why we run them every week. They provide a great service, and we'll talk a little bit more about this in just a little while here about dollar cost averaging and how Swan might be that solution for you.
All right, and with that, I will give you the crypto speak of the week. Right. Now, last week I said we talked about proof of work, and I said, okay, this week we would do proof of stake. And what that is it's randomly chosen. Okay, let me try this again.
Circle back.
What it does is it randomly chooses validators to make sure that the transaction is liable, compensating them in return with crypto.
And how that works is users will be or holders of a given token, such as soon to be Ethereum, once it converts over to a proof of stake mechanism. If you have so much Ethereum, you would stake that on a central contract, and it essentially puts you into a lottery. And every time you win that lottery, you get paid for it. And when it checks you in, or when you win the lottery, it goes over your account for the past transactions on the block, checks them with the rest of them, and as long as everything lines up as it should, you get your reward.
There you go. Yeah.
Pretty straightforward, and a lot of tokens are running under proof of stake protocols.
Yeah, well. And that the biggest one soon to be Ethereum.
Well, we just want to touch on this subject just briefly. The Bitcoin Layer put out a great article this week called Case for DCA Maximalism, and mm-hmm. that is dollar cost averaging. And what they basically said, you know, trying to time the market really doesn't work that well.
It never has it?
You know, you might have the shot of having a 600% return if you happen to get lucky. But generally, you know, most of the day traders quit just after 2 years. 80% of them quit after 2 years. And it's just a testament to the blood sport difficulty of wrestling the market. It really is difficult.
Well, if you've ever seen their say like a report of a day trader, they do a lot of transactions.
Right.
And a lot of money goes back and forth, but at the end of the day, it's not like they have a lot in their pocket.
And when you break it down to the dollar per hour, I've seen some of that. It's working out to like $1.67 if you're lucky. Yeah.
I've paid a lot more than minimum wage out trying to day trade.
So there's that.
Yeah, so you want to, you know, outperforming the timing of stocks and Bitcoin, it just isn't worth your time. Even for the most experienced trader, there's psychology involved, and I'm going to say most of the people in the crypto space have not had traditional financial psychology training. And so why even go ahead and risk your cryptos and risk maybe your family's future security by trying to time the market? And there goes my phone, and I will turn that off in just a moment. So what the average investor should do is dollar cost average in. I mean, Charles Schwab had come out, and that years ago they came to the conclusion with their advisors that that is the best way to go about. They don't recommend any of their advisors to day trade for their clients. And then they did a study saying that it's called perfect time in dollar cost averaging, and they compared returns on the S&P 500 over two decades. And the differential between perfect timing and DCA was only 10.9%.
That's
so
not a lot.
It isn't. So if you're sitting on your duff all day long and looking at a screen and only getting a 10%, possibly a 10% better return, is it really a good use of your time and resources? And here's another factoid that was really amazing to me. It says one of the aspects of the study did not consider the probability of perfectly timing the market. It wasn't even considered because the odds are essentially zero. More accurately, the probability of picking the perfect day to time the market for 30 consecutive years is 1 in 1,240 followed by another 69 zeros chance.
That's just a few.
Well, so, go ahead.
I would think it's worth acknowledging that if you're day trading and you're the common person or even above average at it, you're still doing it off of a gambler's itch. And there's something to chase, and the more you feed that dragon, the bigger it gets. And I think that's where the dangers of day trading really start to come in, and DCAing, as you watch your portfolio grow, it might be some greed might grow in your stomach while you're watching for the first few weeks. But as soon as you start seeing that you're not losing money every week, every day, every hour,
right,
that really does start to build up a whole different mentality of just holding.
Right. And in cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and stuff, it's more of a long haul. You don't look at it as, you know, like a day trading thing to me. It's more of an investment.
Yeah, and yes. I would also say it's, I mean, investing 101 is just don't invest anything that you plan on spending.
Right. Right, yeah. And for those who are going, well, what is this DCA and dollar cost averaging? Just to be clear, it's just where you invest a small amount of money on a regular basis. It could be daily, weekly, monthly, whatever the case is, but you're doing it consistently. And it does help smooth out the gains in the market and the dips in the market. And over time, you generally do better over a period mm-hmm. of time than if you were trying to time the market. It's a great article, and if you go over to our Telegram channel at Tokens Radio Show on Telegram, you'll find this entire report. It comes with charts and all of that, so I'm sure you'll enjoy it as much as we did.
I mean, if you were DCAing on Bitcoin since 2011, you'd essentially be a billionaire right now, if not more, with like $10 a week.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but what's nice is you can still get in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not that cheap.
Well,
but
the point I'm making is the return potential on Bitcoin being a universally adopted currency over the next decade or two, the northbound potential is just insane.
Right. And my point is, for some people, you're able to do it better because you can do $10 a week or whatever it is and still acquire things. And it's not hurting anything else in your life at that point. Instead of gambling, okay, I'll do $500. And you know what
right.
I mean?
Exactly.
So it does make a difference with it being layered out like that for a lot of people out there.
Not right. financial advice.
No. Not that. Yes. Anything but no financial advice. So
and
there you go.
That is also a shameless plug for Swan Bitcoin, where you can do dollar cost averaging and set it and forget it. And we just...
Yep.
Really think they're really
you can do
cool.
it lots of places, but they are by well I can't say the most cost effective because there's so many companies that I have not been, you know,
they are very cost effective.
Gas fees are
just
very
just don't want to go step it on any company's toes. It's like, oh no, we beat them by a penny on every trade.
So they're highly competitive, so yeah. Definitely go check them out, folks. And if you do, you'll get some free Bitcoin just for giving them a try.
So do we get to dive into the fun stuff today?
Absolutely. Why don't we talk about utility and security tokens and a term that Cameron dubbed, which was infrastructure tokens.
Yes. And I would kind of consider that a subcategory in the utility realm.
Yes.
So if we look at cryptos, there's essentially three categories, like base categories. We have cryptocurrencies. Those are those exist to serve as a dollar replacement, yen replacement, pound replacement, whatever. It's something that's going to be a currency, and the idea being that decentralized currency will be acceptable globally so that you're not having to switch currencies when you travel or anything like that. There's instant transaction finality, all of the fun stuff that we beat over the head with a hammer 1,000 times on this show. The more interesting things, in my opinion, at least the more fun things, in my opinion, though, finance is going to change astronomically on Bitcoin alone over the next decade, and it already has in the past decade. But if we're moving on to the utility side of it, and more specifically, what Christy just referred to is infrastructure tokens, they're like a subcategory of utility. We have an entire ecosystem or variety of ecosystems within the cryptosphere, and to participate in those ecosystems, you have to utilize their tokens. And
would there be like a very simple form that we can relate to in the day to day?
Yeah. So if we wanted to go to a casino,
okay,
you don't go and put 50. Well, you do put $50 on the table, but you don't bet with your $50.
Right.
They give you $50 in chips. And while you're in the casino, you can go around with your chips and utilize things. You can even buy things at the register and go buy your food with it, probably pay for your hotel, all kinds of fun things you can do with your chips. But once you leave the casino grounds or any affiliated casino partners or anything like that. Well, those chips are essentially worthless unless someone happens to be on their way to the casino, sees that you have them, and are willing to trade their cash for them. Very unlikely. So before you leave the casino, you go back to the register, swap out your tokens, and you get your cash back.
So you couldn't use them at McDonald's, for
instance. Absolutely right. Not. But that doesn't mean they didn't serve a purpose while
you
were holding them.
Right.
Oftentimes with casino chips, the purpose was to disappear. But with the utility tokens, usually their purpose is to acquire you more of them.
Right.
And do many other things within their ecosystems. But what I like to focus on for just a moment is what we're calling infrastructure tokens. Now, these ones are not designed to act like a casino chip. Users aren't supposed to hold them and consume them. These are operated by, controlled by, and recognized by decentralized autonomous organizations or even traditional organizations within our current like our enterprise system right now. So a good example for this would be what we got to touch on for just a minute last week would be a theoretical token for like Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
So what this what these tokens could do is if it had its own blockchain essentially that it operated on, all the Teslas are constantly mining and they're using tokens to send information to each other on so if you pass a cop, it could mint an NFT and the rest of the Teslas would be aware of this cop being there. That's a very poor example off the top of my head because I'm having a hard time here. But if you crashed your Tesla, this is where it gets very interesting, is if we're using technology like what's in the EOS blockchain, well, the cops could know that your Tesla crashed before you were done skidding out because of how quickly these smart contracts would operate. And what makes it really fail safe is you could have mechanisms that when you turn off your Tesla with a key, it sends out a signal essentially telling the rest of the nodes, the rest of the Teslas, or the rest of whatever car, so we're not plugging something that doesn't exist yet. It could tell the rest of them that safely turned off. Whereas if you came to a crash and the power cut, or if anything happened to where that power cut, it could send a blip out, or it would fail to send a blip, and the rest of the blockchain would recognize that a node just went down, and that could result in a phone call from the police, just, oh, hey, we noticed your node went down, just making sure you're okay. Or furthermore, if you don't answer your phone, maybe emergency response, stuff like that.
So now, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
So how would one Tesla actually talk to the other Tesla if we're using that scenario?
Well, so I think actually going off of a specific car model would be a worse idea than if we all had it on our cell phones. But the idea would be that if it wasn't a Tesla, your Tesla would pretty much have its own cell phone in it. So it's communicating with the other Teslas, but it wouldn't be a cell phone that's bouncing off satellites. It's bouncing off the other Teslas like a subnet.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So what you're explaining basically could be a progression of a system that's already in place is that when we have diagnostic codes, for instance, there's a computer chip that runs in all of our cars, and we've all seen the check engine light come on, right? Mm-hmm. And you go, what is that all about? And you go in and you have you can go down and either do it yourself or have somebody, a mechanic, do a code reader for you. And it will register what's going on with the car. That goes to a database, a centralized database, so that the mechanics can go ahead and see what have been a majority of those codes. Right. So a lot of times there might be two or three codes that come up for a check engine light scenario. But what Cameron's describing here, it would eliminate much of that. It would improve the diagnostics dramatically because it's pinpointing exactly what is happening. The car shut down. Something happened. There was a vibration. And where did that happen? And it's telling everything along the telling the blockchain every part of the progression of that failure.
Okay, you right. said everything I need to hear to go off on a quick tangent.
Okay, great. Okay.
So first of all, what you could very easily incorporate off of this philosophy, just the most obvious progression is your car's ordering its own parts. They're showing up at your door. Very simple.
That would be very cool.
Yeah, and that doesn't even, that's not even like a leap on what we're talking about.
Right.
You could program a Raspberry Pi to hook up to your car, and as soon as those diagnostics go, it sends it off. That's something that's achievable right now. Now, where the blockchain makes it extremely interesting is that you have essentially a fail-proof connection if we're talking about something that is a wide net of cars as soon as it hits scale, which you might have problems if you're not using a satellite connection early on, but the odds are they would because we all have GPS in our cars anyway, so it wouldn't make sense to not be able to connect.
Or our phones.
Yeah. So once you're in that fun little bit, we get to look at some of the extreme benefits of a public ledger. When we're talking about blockchains, a lot of people don't see where that can be beneficial.
Sure.
I mean, sure, we can go back and see our transaction history, and that's fun. Now, we've all had our check engine light come on and then turn back off, I'd imagine. Well, there would still be...
Secure the gas cap.
Yeah. But it could be...
Buy a new one.
Who knows anything.
Right,
or
right.
You don't remember what light came on.
Right.
Or a family got in an accident and their car exploded, and figuring out what happened, what went wrong
right.
is essentially impossible. All of these things would be recorded. So
sure.
That failure, they got a check engine light. Well, if the computer's fried and we go try to check a Prius and see, okay, well, why did it catch on fire? It knew it shorted, but it even if it wrote itself a message to why it shorted, its message is deleted. The message would not be deleted on a public ledger. So if the failure started at the battery, not only would we be able to go on and recognize that that's where that was and kind of solve the mystery there, but we could also look for that same failure before it's happening in the rest of the cars. So if it's an ongoing, like if it takes a week to progress, well, the odds are the car noticed that there was a diminishing rate and an algorithm mm-hmm. at which it was diminishing at. Now, the rest of the cars can look for that algorithm within their battery, and if they start seeing a diminishing life rate or something like that, they can all recognize it, notify you, and just stop turning on. Maybe we don't want it to not be able to turn on. We all want our sense of freedom and stuff. But we could require a manual override. All kinds of fun things that replace us having to be responsible for things that we have no way of being responsible for. And furthermore, most of us have no idea how many accidents the car that we're driving has been in, and not just the car that we're in, but that model, that make, anything that's a particular problem with it, once it's on a public ledger, you know that GMC's not having problems with their brakes that I know of. But arbitrary example, if there's a whole bunch of failures or faulty brakes going out on GMCs, and it's cheaper for them to cover up or to pay out the lawsuits than it is to do a recall, then you as a consumer never buy or never know that that brake issue exists.
Look at all the recalls that come out now after thousands and thousands
exactly.
of reports.
It takes
always
so many
afterward.
Before the recall happens.
That's correct.
So
yes.
You get to have this knowledge in advance.
This is happening in real
but
time.
But it would also be good for purchasing a car. It'd be like Carfax on
that's
steroids.
What I mean.
Yeah, whether you're buying new or used.
Yeah.
So
you would
I'm going
be able to get the history.
This is a new Porsche. Now I'm going to look at every NFT of, okay, this is the Model T whatever car. With the way NFTs work, you'd have an address and then a whole bunch of specific addresses that are sort of sub-addresses. So the 2010 Model T special features X, Y, and Z, that would be its own NFT. And every car that had those exact features would have its own sort of sub-identifier within the NFT world. You could go through each one of those cars and see how long it takes for their first error to pop up.
And with that, I think it's about time that we need to take a break. We will continue this conversation. If you want to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. This is KCNR, 1460 AM and 96.5 FM.
You got to pay. This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere Ag and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home too. Give us a call at 221-0441 to let us help you review your policies and prepare you for whatever your future holds. Maxwell Insurance, 1378 Hilltop Drive, 221-0441.
It was a star and there's fire on the mountain, lightning in the air, golden in heels and it's waiting for me there.
Well, welcome back. Again, if you want to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. And before we went to break, we were talking about utility tokens, and we'll probably be moving to securities. But we will pick that up here in a moment. First, the word from our affiliate partner.
Well, to make a fortune in crypto, you only have to be right once. Which crypto projects could be the next Amazon, Google, Netflix, or Apple? Banks who have the most to lose are trying to regulate the industry. What options are available to you? If you're all in on crypto but wonder what to buy it, how to keep it safe, when to sell it, and how to minimize taxes when you do, then Crypto Confidential is for you. For a fraction of the cost of retaining experts, Crypto Confidential is the team of the world's best, boldest, and brightest crypto experts around. They do bi-monthly AMAs, which are Ask Me Anything questions, access to the experts through a private forum, in-person events, monthly publication, a 60-day money-back guarantee. It's not a cheap publication, but you'll pay way more if you hired a group of consultants separately to have one-on-one time with them, to consult with them about a particular project, whatever, what have you. So check out their introduction page and see if this is for you. Use our link at tokensradioshow.com/CC. That's tokensradioshow.com/CC.
All right.
So shall we continue our conversation? We were talking about Tesla, and if we want to wrap that up, when we went into the break, we started talking about the black boxes that are already in Tesla.
Yeah, so they're already implementing that technology, but the same premises of the ideas behind what we're talking about with their black boxes. So if a Tesla gets in an accident, the proper authorities and rescue dispatch and all of that are sent to the location and have the right equipment and the right training to properly deal with a Tesla. Really quick, if I could sidebar over to AI, because I actually think that's a really interesting side of this infrastructure token.
The artificial intelligence side of it, yes.
what we're looking at when we talk about smart contracts is something that can be a lot more self-correcting than traditional computer systems, in the sense that they have a lot of things feeding them. So if you have a website and you want it to get better, you have you're pretty much dependent on the users. So if you want to train like advertising, you want to check a whole bunch of different color schemes and see where people pause on the longest or anything like that. Eventually you get all of this data. Well, with a blockchain, it's getting data from all of these devices and it's not going to a central authority. So no one can actually see this data. However, if it knows that green gets your attention more often, if the code is properly conducted or whatever, it can make that show up within your feed more often or something like that. And that's almost a more disturbing version of where the AI can go.
It almost sounds like the creepy Google commercial, if you've seen that.
Now, what we can also have on this, though, is what we're talking about with cars driving around is self-generated maps. So if you know a shortcut and Google Maps never catches it, but 1 in 10 cars that are going from destination A to destination B just go cut across where it seems there isn't a road, it can start to figure out that there is something there that you can drive through. And then once it pops up this optional route on your maps, if more people take it, it could become the suggested route, even though it's something Google Maps never picks up on. Just little things like that. But the idea being that with an entire blockchain, the more people that are participating in the blockchain, more people mining, the more people that are benefiting from the blockchain in the first place, the blockchain can improve itself by all the data that's being fed to it. And that is especially relevant in cars with self-driving underway. We can it can see, okay, I made a 13.2 degree turn, and that led to an accident, so now it needs to correct it to a 13.195 degree turn. This all seems a little arbitrary for humans that are very used to what we're doing, but the future's happening a lot faster than we realize.
And a lot of things,
And I think what you're talking about here comes down to programmability. So we're at a state right now where so many things are programmed. And so what we're talking about here is the future, about things that have not been programmed yet, but we can theorize about what those challenges might be, and that's where developers will need to be working and focusing their attention on. And that's what's really exciting about this and where it will go. And yes, there might be a little bit of creepy Google type of stuff going on there. And I will digress here for just a moment. If you haven't seen that commercial, it's about the guy who comes right up and he's singing and talking about how he's watching you, and it's the Google guy.
I haven't seen the
Google
it's
guy. Really a trip. But so anyway, you made me flash on that with the AI and the creepy Google commercial. So,
but it may seem that way with some things, but we all know that we're progressing, and we're going to certain areas in life that we maybe need to have some knowledge of. Whether we agree with it to a certain degree or what, this is what we're evolving into and what it can do for us. And you have to have the knowledge and the education in order to even begin to understand where we're headed in the long run.
Us having the practical education of knowing where this is going, but we don't need to have the technical education.
Right.
There's tools like AI that will help. Mm-hmm. And the developers who are very talented engineers who can go ahead and program that, because this is all possible about programmable capabilities of these tokens and technologies.
I was going to, for a second, head over to where this becomes less hackable and how much of a difference that makes on this, but I think that that could end up being its own show, or at least a good segment of a show. So if we could move over to the security side, that might actually be really interesting.
All right.
Is there anything more to touch on that utility front?
Well, I'd like to bring home something that people might be more more relatable to, because we talked about, you know, futuristic there for a moment. But if anybody spends time on the Brave browser, for instance, the basic attention token is a utility token where you reward it for allowing advertisers to present you an advertisement on your browser. and you'll be rewarded tokens for that. Twitter is another place where you can be rewarded tokens as well. They're not mineable cryptocurrencies. You know, they're pre-mined, and there's a team that decides how those tokens are going to be utilized. And so it would be a sense of rewards. It might be voting rights, that type of thing. So, but the basic attention tokens, there's a couple others out here that I wanted to bring up that were. Yeah, go ahead.
With that basic attention token, because that's actually a really interesting one. Because the way it works out, if you or I wanted to start an app and we wanted to include advertising in it, what we could do is with our app, except so instead of going to Google Ads and getting sponsors from Google Ads fed to our, us and whatnot, instead it would be if they wanted to put an advertisement in our game, they send us, say, 1,000 BAT. And what we then do with it is if a user clicks on the ad, they get 0.9 BAT and we get 0.1 BAT. And that ad shows 1,000 times. Whereas if they don't click on it, we just get the entire BAT for them seeing it or something like that. But it works out really well for being a utility token for companies. And it makes it so the users don't go away from an ad wall or anything like that, because it feels much more beneficial to them and they're getting a slice of their time back, essentially.
Well, one of the things I think, well, this isn't a utility token, but it, along the same lines, is like with using the full card.
Yeah.
If you're stacking Satoshis, just because you're using the card, you get rewarded in Satoshis, which is very exciting because that does have some sort of financial incentive to use it. Whenever you have an incentive to use a product and earn a reward, why not?
Yeah, and it doesn't cost you or put anything at jeopardy.
Exactly.
Or anything. You're going to be making those purchases or doing that transaction anyway. So it always makes us feel good to go, woohoo, I got this. Yeah. Yay. You know what I mean? That's us. You know, that's humans.
I got a couple factoids about utility tokens,
yep,
if you like to hear them. Well, first of all, the top utility tokens by rating is the Lucky Block, the Ape Coin, the Basic Attention Token, and Yearn Finance. Interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, why invest in utility tokens? People do. And the majority of investors purchase them as investments. And the value of the utility tokens fluctuates similarly to that of other financial assets, thus purchasing and selling them might provide profits.
And it's a little bit more exciting on how that works as far as going in and out of utility tokens or security tokens or any of them for that matter, because if you're in the decentralized finance world or the crypto world and you're not trading on a centralized exchange such as Coinbase or something, what happens is the way the price is adjusted north or south is proportionate to each trade very specifically, because the tokens that are being sold are balanced by tokens that you're buying them with. And as that ratio changes, the price is affected. But it makes it so the price can't just drop off a cliff because the demand drops off a cliff. There's still the same amount of liquidity on both ends of that, regardless of the demand dropping off a cliff, as long as the supply doesn't just shoot through the roof. Whereas in the stock market, you have a whole bunch of Tesla stock, and I don't know why I'm keep going to Tesla here.
But Tesla's your game today, that's why.
It's because Elon and his tweets on the crypto world, I guess. But you have a whole bunch of stocks in Tesla. Well, if Tesla shuts down, liquidates or whatever, there's a good chance you're not going to be able to sell your stock before it's just not, no one's going to buy it. If there's no one to buy
value.
Your stock, then your stock has no value. With decentralized finance, there's not a third party that's buying your trade. There's a balanced liquidity pool. So until all the liquidity has drained, there doesn't need to be demand from the consumer end or the buyer side. Which it protects your investment a little bit more. It's that small degree of trustlessness.
Yeah, well, you know, with utility tokens, I think we've done really well with that subject, and we go flip to the security token.
Oh,
and it's would you agree it's more of an investment type of contract?
Well, The idea behind the security.
It reflects legal ownership.
Yeah, and it's to get your share in a company for providing fundraising in general, correct?
And the security token's directly proportional to the company's valuation, whereas a utility token is a little bit different. And the more valuable the corporation, the greater the token's value.
So it's almost like a share.
It could be.
It's
very similar. Very similar.
Yeah. I call it super stock. Because
okay, super stock. Yeah, I'll go with that. That's cool.
To that point, there's no relationship between the present capitalization of the firm and the value of the utility token.
Just to put it in a slightly like layman's term, so to speak, if you buy common stock or preferred stock or any special stock in a company, you get, well, with common stock, you don't get squat. But if you have preferred squat and you're getting dividends, A, your dividend, preferred squat, my bad.
Okay. Don't get the preferred squat. Because
by the time I'm done with this, it'll sound like preferred squat.
No, it's all good.
If you're investing in stocks, essentially you're, more times than not, the value of your stock comes from other people wanting it. And then if you have preferred stock or something, it gets paid out dividends. If the company does very well, you get some small amount, and it's usually extremely minuscule in proportion to what you've put in, and it's annual, and you get taxed on more than it's worth and all kinds of fun stuff. Now, if we go over to the security token side, if they're well-designed security tokens in a well-designed organization, whether it's a decentralized organization that's autonomous or it's just a trustless organization, though still centrally operated. You could have a company that acts like Amazon, and users are selling whatever, and buyers are buying that stuff. So I want to buy a car from someone in Washington. Well, I send them my Bitcoin, and there's a small transaction fee through the organization. Well, with crypto, what you could have this do autonomously with absolutely no trust involved, no human interference, you don't have to count on anyone doing their job, is a fraction of that sale could trustlessly go back to buying back the security token, therefore driving its value, or it could be sent out to its holders or any sort of thing like that. But that idea being the benefit that a token is designed to provide as a security is guaranteed to a degree, whereas within the stock world, I mean, they can split, they can do all kinds of things seemingly on a whim if you're not following the company extremely diligently.
Well, from what I think I follow you on this, but security tokens are highly regulated, and they need to be able to, I should say, they're not highly regulated, they're rigorously controlled. So the likelihood for a security token to be defrauded is far less than a utility token, for instance, because of the rigorous control of that security. Plus, there's tests that must be performed for a security token to be considered a security coin or token, those terms being used interchangeably, by a Howey test.
Yeah.
And that's where securities are tested under that. It's a 1933 Securities Act law, and it was verified by the Supreme Court. So it has, and under a Howey test, an investment contract exists if there's an investment of money in a common enterprise with a reasonable expectation of profits to be derived from the efforts of others.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what makes the difference between security and a utility. So when you're going to go ahead and buy back, okay, that mechanism, it has to be clearly done in such a way to where it's rigorously controlled to make sure that happens. Because we've seen rug pulls where that has happened for tokens that should be considered securities, but they're not.
So an example of this would be if a very simple way to do it. I want to open up a car dealership in town, but I can't afford to do so. And I want 10 investors to come on and help me get it open. So I register my entity as a security, and I go and mint 1,000 tokens. And I get 10 investors, and they each buy 100 of these tokens. What I can say is every car that I sell is going to be sold in Bitcoin and hard contracted into its code, because I'm selling it as an NFT so that they can, through my own program marketplace.
Which an NFT is not a security token.
But I mean the token that my investors are holding. So I sold 1,000 of them, and let's just say for $100,000. So okay. They're each $100 tokens.
Right.
My investors each have their tokens. I sell a car for 1 Bitcoin, and that car was an NFT. Well, within that NFT's hard-coded transaction fees, that it knows how much of it is profit because it knows how much the car costs. So the car costs 0.75 Bitcoin, we'll say. Out of that 0.25 Bitcoin, 20% of it, or 0.05 Bitcoin, is going to be divided among my investors, and there's nothing I can do to stop it. Nothing the buyer can do to stop it or anything like that, because when they scan my phone and say they accept it, or they scan my barcode and say that they accept the transaction fees and confirm their transaction, once that finalizes, the Bitcoin would end up in two destinations. One in the corporate wallet or the organization's wallet, whatever, owned by the car lot, and then one in like a trustless contract where only people holding my token that I sent out as a security token can claim, and you can claim your share of it based on how much of the token you're holding.
So is securities limited, like shares, so to speak? Because, you know, in a company, usually you say 10,000 shares or whatever for this company, and that's why people will buy or get involved with the shares, is for the value of it.
And the idea would be typically yes. Sorry if you were then.
No, I was just going to go ahead and finish your thought.
The idea would be typically that they'd be limited, but what we see in crypto is a lot of unlimited token counts.
Right.
But also, the vast majority of companies will jump through hoops to not be a security. And if you can find a utility where and you market it as your investors are not getting a return, it's not designed to be sold. The value is not going to be coming from the monetary value in that token. That's generally what they're trying to push for, because once you're a security, you have to get registered if your identity is discoverable or whatever. But once you're a registered security, you're on a radar pretty much.
Right.
And most crypto companies are actively avoiding that.
Well, I think what's going to happen, like in the scenario you described, that would probably work really well on a peer-to-peer. But if you're looking for something to go more mainstream, global, then you're probably going to be moving into the ISO 20022 compliance, which is going to be what's going to make everything sing moving forward. And just some of my research that I was doing, XRP, XLM are already ISO 20022 compliant, and that's why they're somewhat the favored transaction coin.
Okay.
So the difficulty is getting Bitcoin to be ISO 20022 compliant. It has something to do with their official coding within the the ISO system, it, for lack of better terms, is kind of like how it works with SWIFT. All the banks and so forth have a particular code. But with Bitcoin, there's already a country code for BTC. So they're having difficulty giving it a code for Bitcoin. So, but I think to your point, Cameron, if Bitcoin, Ethereum, so forth could be under ISO 20022 compliance, then we're off to the races. Then that's going to be a standard. And really that's probably what the industry is looking for, is like, let's settle this thing right now. Just like what went through the Senate just last week with the introduction of the crypto regulation bill, is that we're finally having some rules laid down, and it looks as though it's not going to be running through the SEC. They're going to run it through the commodities side of governance. So, interesting stuff.
And we're seeing a really weird world in the crypto world because of it. It's such a wild west at the moment. Now, while a lot of so many definitions could be applied to any given token. Now, if we look back at XRP, that is looked at as a currency, but the SEC is making the case that it's a security.
Right.
And the flaw being that they didn't register as a security, though. If you look into the history of that whole thing, it's the SEC dropped the ball.
Although XRP is used in other countries around the world as a payment processing coin.
Where it gets interesting is the claim SEC would be that Ripple, the company that made XRP, paid its users or its employees in a security, and it's super illegal to pay your users or your employees in unregistered security. And the concern would be that if their only expectation was that they could sell their XRP and get their money back for the labor that they provided, well, then XRP is a security. Now, it gets tricky because it clearly is going up and down in value, so it does look like a security. If they want to use it in America, the odds of being able to just spend it, like you could spend fiat, are slim to none. But if they were to travel the world and if they wanted to buy a house in Fiji or wherever it is that's taken XRP, well, they are streamlined to do so because they already have their XRP and they're set for it. So
Visa and MasterCard is already online with it, whereas MoneyGram had purchased XLM, the Stellar Lumens, and they are ISO 20022 compliant. So they're already set up. I just don't think Ripple's going to lose this lawsuit. It's going to come out in their favor, and XRP and XLM, I believe, are the chosen coins. Thank you to Melissa, who keeps sending me a lot of information to convince me of that, because I have not been a fan of XRP.
Yeah.
She's kind of making me a fan.
Well, it's interesting because I think – users like yourself and me, one of the big things we look for in the crypto world is decentralized.
Right.
We don't really want to see that a handful of people have control over our money. They can stop transactions. They can make more.
We don't want
to
see
that. That's where I was going to go with this. This code and all that. Where do they get involved in this? Because it's supposed to be decentralized.
It's just a transaction code, and it will be centralized.
Yeah.
But that will be the chosen digital coin, but it won't be a CBDC. And what's very cool about the bill that was just submitted to the Senate is that our country does not want CBDCs. Thankfully, even that's a bipartisan consensus. They do not want the CBDC because of the censorship. But doesn't mean it won't happen in the future.
Yeah, that's a topic for another
day. Been a rabbit hole conversation today.
Yeah, this opens up a lot of territory. Yes. I mean, a lot of thoughts, a lot of things going on in there about this.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes, it's very good, and it's something to consider. And this is real. We started off saying about 85% of the tokens out there don't have the day-to-day value, the usability in terms of currency, but they're used in so many ways. They're used to operate within a particular ecosystem. If you're an aerospace engineer, you'll need tokens to operate in that industry to do some certain developmental type of actions for developers.
And just the ability to produce NFTs, non-fungible tokens, that's extremely valuable. But real quick before we head out, so if Tesla wanted, just because we're going with Tesla today, if we wanted to buy stock in Tesla, or if Tesla didn't want to sell stock anymore but still wanted to raise capital and all that fun stuff that they typically do, a very wise thing for them to do would be to stop selling stock and start selling Tesla token and just give Tesla token to all their current stockholders. But then they could have trustless operations for their stockholders. Right. The return on investment would be more transparent because you could see what Bitcoin they earned and how much they gave back, all this fun stuff. Just a fun little benefit. We're going to see tokens replacing stocks very soon, I believe.
And with that, I hate to tell you guys, but we're at the end of the show.
This is great.
That was a good one.
All right. We will talk to everybody next week. Have a great
Thank
week.
Thank you. Have a great Thank week.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.